Hey everybody, it's Stephanie Okupniak, and I hope you're all keeping well in these crazy times. We're working really hard on season 2 of A Life Lived in Lockdown. It's going to be dropping later this year, and we've got really amazing episodes on B.B. King and George Michael, Whitney Houston, and River Phoenix. But in the meantime, I want to point you in the direction of a new original series from Audioboom. It's called Truth vs. Hollywood. Now, if you're like me and you've been curious about whether or not those movies that have the quote-unquote based on a true story at the beginning are as real as the film makes out, then this is the podcast for you. You can listen to Truth vs. Hollywood on all your favorite podcast apps each and every Friday. And because you're a subscriber to A Life Lived, we've got an exclusive first listen to this episode on Goodfellas. Come on! It doesn't get more iconic. So sit back and enjoy. And while you're listening, be sure to search for and subscribe to Truth vs. Hollywood in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, everywhere you listen to your audio on demand. But as I said, A Life Lived will be back soon. But right now, here's Truth vs. Hollywood.
Welcome to Truth vs. Hollywood. I'm David Chen.
And I'm Joanna Robinson.
Truth vs. Hollywood is a look at films that are based on a true story. But we don't just talk about the film, we also talk about that true story. On this podcast, we'll touch on what really happened, how that differs from the film, and why. And we're not just talking heads, we'll hear about the true story through interviews from experts, witnesses, and people who were involved in it. It's both the real facts and the real facts. R-E-E-L facts. What do you think of that, Joanna?
I loved it. Today we're talking about Martin Scorsese's classic film, Goodfellas. Goodfellas is based on the book Wise Guy by Nicholas Pileggi, which in turn is based on the life of mobster Henry Hill. Hill was actually alive when the film came out and was very pleased with this great film based on him. And as we'll talk about later, it definitely had an effect on his life. Pileggi worked with Scorsese to write the screenplay, and the film was a complete hit. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards and won one, Joe Pesci, for Supporting Actor. It's considered one of the best gangster movies of all times. AFI put it on their list of 100 Years, 100 Movies, and the Library of Congress decided that it was culturally important and added it to its preservation archives.
All right, well, let's get to the movie itself. It stars Ray Liotta as Henry Hill, Robert De Niro as Jimmy the Gent Conway, who is based on Jimmy the Gent Burke, Joe Pesci as Tommy DeVito, based on Tommy DeSimone, Paul Sorvino as Paul Cicero, based on Paul Vario, and Lorraine Bracco as Henry's wife, Karen Hill. Many real-life figures that this movie was based off of, and apparently Henry Hill ended up getting paid $580,000 because of the use of his story in this movie, which is a lot of money to pay to a mobster who's done very horrible things. You know, in watching this movie again, Joanna Robinson, one of the things that I kind of realized, you know, or reflected on is the fact that we've, in the last few decades, seen so many movies about bad men doing bad things, and that this movie is kind of one of the prototypical examples of how they can be glorified and elevated. And this kind of movie makes that lifestyle look really glamorous, while at the same time depicting some of the negative consequences of that lifestyle. But at the same time, it does rub me the wrong way that, like, the people who are involved often are rewarded. We also saw this with Martin Scorsese's Wolf of Wall Street as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A similar dynamic there. So I'm kind of curious, like, as you're reflecting on your overall experience of watching the movie, and now that we know a little bit more about what happened with the real-life characters, and we're going to talk about it during the course of this podcast, like, how did it strike you that this is based off of a real person?
I think Scorsese couldn't have picked a better real-life subject to glom onto here than Henry Hill, because though he is a gangster and he's fully involved in this gangster life, he is the likability of this character, which is really what Scorsese was going for. I've seen interviews where he talked about the 1932 Scarface, which was the first time he ever saw gangsters depicted as really likable. And you have Henry Hill, And he does terrible things, but he's a gangster who is a little squeamish. We see this throughout the film, and it's corroborated by, you know, true story of his life. He was violent. He did crimes, but he wasn't a mass murderer. And, you know, the charisma of him, I think, is really important.
Yeah, he wasn't one of the most vicious people in the story.
Yeah.
And so I think you're making a good point that, like, if you're going to choose an entryway into this world, Henry Hill is probably the ideal candidate in this case. So... well, the film opens with three men driving in a car having a seemingly normal evening. It's then revealed that there is a captive in the trunk, and then they shortly after execute him. We immediately get Henry's voiceover with the iconic line, "As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster." It's one of the most memorable openings in all of cinema history. Joanna Robinson, after nearly three decades, how effective did you find this opening?
Well, it's funny, you know, I did not see, I was 8 years old when Goodfellas came out, or maybe nine. So I did not see it in theaters, and I didn't see it until later in life. And but by then it had already seeped into the culture because it was so iconic. You know, there's like the Animaniacs, Goodfeathers, pigeon parody, and like all sorts of stuff. So I was aware of the beats of it, even though
Your first exposure to Goodfellas was Animaniacs, is what you're saying, right?
1,000%. Absolutely. But, you know, so by the time I had seen it, I had also seen so many things that had imitated it. And this is true of like so many of our great films. Like by the time you get around to watching it, maybe you've seen a bunch of people knock it off. And so you're like, well, how groundbreaking is this really? And this movie is incredibly groundbreaking. And what's funny is this this opening is so famous to the point of almost parody. Like you get this moment where he goes, "As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster." And it reminds me of that like record scratch. "Yeah, it's me. I bet you're wondering how I got here," you know, sort of thing that we
right.
talk about. You know, and we've seen it, you know, in a more serious fashion. We've seen this sort of thing replicated. I'm thinking of like the premiere of Breaking Bad. You meet this person in the middle of a crime and then you find out how they got there. You know, so knowing that, it's not as fresh and innovative as it might have been if I had seen it in the theaters in 1990, but it's still, you can sense the iconic status of it. What do you think of it, Dave?
It's kind of hard to put yourself into the position of the first time you saw the movie because I saw this movie, you know, decades ago, and I do think back then it wasn't clear to me like what was actually going on in the car right from the opening shot. You know what I mean? Like it starts like so seemingly normal, these dudes just hanging out, and then all of a sudden you realize like something horrifying is happening. And I like that contrast. Like now, like because the scene is so iconic and everyone knows what happens, it's tough to remember that like there was a time in history when like many people didn't know that that was about to happen. But I can kind of imagine if I could rewind my life, you know, several decades and rewatch this again, like that would be super effective and quite a shock when they open up the trunk on Billy Bats. So anyway. Love the opening. It still is great. And the freeze frame, you're right. Many things have parodied it. Many things have been derived from it. But it is still a legendary moment in this movie and in all of the cinema. And I quite loved it. So after this scene, we cut to Henry Hill's life as a child. It's a very modest upbringing. And one of the things I like about this movie is, you know, we often see mob movies and the mob characters are already fully formed, right? But Goodfellas invites you into the world of a child who is viewing the mob from the outside and why they might find the mafia to be so intoxicating. What did you think of these early scenes with Henry Hill in childhood?
I love this opening. You know, we cut to the eyeball, right? Directly on his eyeball. And then we see what he's seeing out the window. And I didn't take many film studies classes, but I did take one where we learned about Martin Scorsese's upbringing. And I know that he had really serious asthma. And that meant that he was, you know, like he couldn't go out and play. It's why he went to go see movies a lot. He couldn't like go play in the streets with friends. And he was also stuck at home a lot. And he's written and talked a lot about how he was sort of like a shut-in as a kid and used to watch the cinema of the streets like from his window. And so he's put himself, like his own childhood, basically in this Henry Hill opening. And I think that's fascinating and telling that he wants us there with Henry, but then he like, because he's also put himself there, you know what I mean? And I just think that's a really interesting choice.
We should also say that the actor who plays young Henry Hill, Christopher Cerrone, bears an uncanny resemblance to Ray Liotta. I thought they did a great job casting young Henry Hill. So
you know how like sometimes you don't understand what's unique about someone's face until you've seen them try to cast a younger version of them?
Yes.
And you're like, oh, yes. There's something with the eyes. It's really amazing, the kid they found there. Yeah, it's a great
job. Indeed. Well, Daniel Simone, who wrote the book Lufthansa Heist, which is about Henry Hill's most lucrative robbery, gives us some more insight into Henry's background and upbringing.
His father was an electrician who worked for wages. The family was rather large. Their apartment was cramped. It was not the type of situation where every sibling had his or her own room, for example. They shared beds. They shared everything. He happened to have been reared in a neighborhood infested with mafia gangsters. In fact, right across the street from his home was a taxicab stand owned and operated by Paul Vario and his brothers.
So Henry literally walks into the taxi stand and he starts working for Vario, or in the film, Cicero, who's played by Paul Sorvino. Early on, we meet Robert De Niro's character, Jimmy Conway. He's made out to be an extremely appealing and charismatic figure in the film. I mean, it is a young Robert De Niro, after all. He looks awesome. He looks like magnetic, luminous. And young Henry really takes a shine to him and aspires to be that exact type of gangster, living the high life, having connections. And Daniel Simone says the real life Jimmy was the same way.
He was prosperous. He was respected by the family bosses, particularly Paul Vario. In fact, many of the mafia families at times would compete for his association because he was such a reliable earner of, you know, through schemes and manipulations. And Henry Hill loved all those characteristics about Jimmy Burke. He loved the fact that Jimmy Burke would be respected wherever he went, into a restaurant, into a nightclub. Chairs would pull out immediately. Jimmy Burke did not need reservations to book the best table in a restaurant. And these were all the fascinating, intoxicating traits that Jimmy Burke wielded and were all attractive to Henry Hill.
Something I really love about what this film does is it takes the American dream, the idea we have of wealth and success, and puts it in this world of the mafia. And I just like what that says about the American dream to begin with. It really exposes sort of some of the violence and the brutality that we sometimes like to gloss over when we think of the sort of the most picturesque version of the American dream.